Masculinity, to me, a big piece of that is physicality. It's a physical capability to push the limits. It's being strong. It's being able to endure. Welcome to the Tailored Life Podcast. This is the podcast for every average individual who wants to live an above average life and do it in an above average physique. That is what this show is all about. That is who I am. I am an average dude who has just wanted to live an above average life. He wanted to accomplish above average things, and he wanted to do it all in an above average body. And so that's what I'm chasing. Sometimes I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but I'm in the pursuit, and I've accomplished a lot in my day. I've met some really cool people. I've learned a lot of cool things. I've done a lot of cool certs. I have some letters and credentials and stuff behind my name that I think give me the credibility to talk on some of this stuff. But most importantly, I'm here to create value and to help you do all those things I just said to be more successful with your life in every single area. So once again, this is the Tailored Life Podcast, and this is all about tailoring your life to be designed in a way that allows you to thrive and accomplish above average things. We mainly talk about fitness and nutrition here, but we do not leave ourselves just to that. We talk about much more. We dive into personal development. We dive into business. We dive into parenting and marriage and lifestyle and all kinds of stuff because I don't like to put myself on a box when I'm creating content and delivering value. I like to deliver as much value as I can and do it in a way that allows people to just be more of who they should and could be. So with that being said, this is a Q&A. So we're going to dive into some questions today. We got some really good ones, and I'm excited to dive into them. And the first one actually was posted to us from the last interview I did. Not the last interview. Shoot, what am I? Let's see. I'm going to look back on Spotify real quick and tell you guys when it was. Let's go to the Tailored Life Podcast. Where was it? It was episode. We'll link this in the show notes. Episode 930. So, man, we put out a lot of podcasts. So that was a few weeks ago now. Episode 930, Living the Impossible Life with Nick Surface. And Jillian sent in a question. She clicked the little green box. So if you are listening to this right now and you want to leave me a comment, you want to give me some feedback, you want to tell me what you enjoyed about it, you want to share with listeners how you feel, you want to ask a question directly, whatever it may be, you can literally go to Spotify while you're listening to it. Just click that green button and leave us a comment. Leave us a topic, idea, a guest, something like a Q&A, whatever you want. It's going to directly get sent to me and it helps us grow. It helps people see it on Spotify, and it's really cool to see. So Jillian Shipman, she said, loved the episode. It had me thinking about something unrelated to ask you and Nick. And I actually texted Nick and said, hey, dude, answer this question for me, and I'll bring it up on the podcast next time I have the chance. So I will be actually going down there again. So hopefully I'll be jumping on their show. I know that I'm going to have the other host of the Impossible Life podcast, Garrett, on my show eventually. There's a lot of cool people down at in the group of guys out there that I hang out with. Steve Kuko is one who is a former Mr. Olympia competitor. He has a mindset like a life mastermind now. He does he has his own bodybuilding competition. It's crazy actually, because I literally was one of those guys that I would buy like Flex Magazine, Muscular Development, all these magazines back in the day before social media, and this dude was on the cover, right? And then I'm like sitting in church and I look over, I'm like, holy shit, that's him. And like literally, sure enough, it is. My buddy out there, Pierce, ran a 200 miler, literally 200 mile race. And then 18 days later ran another 200 mile race. And then like a month later, maybe he ran he's about to run it, a 240 miler. I think it's this month. Actually, it is this month. So like literally back to back 200s. And then like a month later, a 240, I don't know how he does it. It's insane. So I'm going to interview him eventually too, to talk about that, cause that is just insane. I can't even imagine it. Anyway. So a lot of cool people out there. So we'll definitely be connecting with them and we'll bring this up. So Jillian, thank you so much. I got a lot of good feedback on that podcast and I'm glad that you liked it. And if you didn't listen to it yet, make sure you go check out that podcast, because it really is a great just overall personal development podcast of myself and Nick just diving deep into the weeds with this stuff. She said, love the episode. It had me thinking about something unrelated to ask you and Nick. What does masculinity mean to you? So I think this is a good question, because there's like this idea of like toxic masculinity nowadays, which I don't fully understand if I'm being completely transparent. So I'm not going to act like I'm well-versed on that side of things, because I do tend to kind of stay in my lane and just kind of stay in my own bubble and ignore a lot of the drama based like media stuff that comes out and that's talked about constantly. It just doesn't serve me. So I just ignore it for the most part. But what I think masculinity is kind of what I talked about in the beginning of this podcast, which isn't really, it's not necessarily masculine only because it's not solely like reserved for men. And that's just to accomplish more with your body, right? Like I believe it was Socrates has that quote of like, there's no excuse for man to not see what his body is capable of, something along those lines. I remember hearing that when I was younger, and that really like struck me. It was really very profound, because here's this like stoic philosopher talking about nobody has the right or the excuse to not see what's possible and to explore what the body is capable of. In fact, it's exactly what I was talking to, funny enough, Garrett the other day. It was like about my bodybuilding show as I'm getting closer, my physique competition, and saying like, man, it's just, you know, it's like a science experiment to me. Like it's fascinating seeing myself get so lean. It's fascinating watching these changes happen and seeing the vascularity increase. And although there's hunger cues, there's sleep issues, there's things that go on, there's also a lot of benefits to confidence, to getting lean, to seeing what my body's capable of, to testing my willpower, my discipline, and those things as well. And honestly, a lot of mental clarity. Like now there's, you know, slight brain fog at times, but there's a lot of mental clarity because I'm eating so clean. This is actually one of the times I've appreciated proper digestion, micronutrients, micronutrient density with your foods, and even just being sober and just not drinking any alcohol for a little bit. Even though I didn't drink a lot, I still drank, you know, once a week, sometimes twice, but usually once a week. But I drank a good amount when I could, because I can drink, right? And so point being is like, I feel like it's such a cheesy way of saying it, but my body is so clean right now. It's like there's no alcohol present. There's no junk food present, because I'm eating the most nutrient dense and voluminous foods I can to make sure that I stay full and I get as many micronutrients as possible. Because when you get really lean, a lot of those micronutrients are stored in body fat. And if you get really lean, you can't store those micronutrients. So fat soluble vitamins can get depleted and you can be insufficient in those vitamins and minerals, right? And on top of that too, you just have less calories coming in. So you have less nutrients coming in. So anyway, that's beside the point. To me, it's been a cool science experiment. And I think if you can treat your body that way in the physical realm, like that's a form of masculinity to me. Masculinity to me, a big piece of that is physicality. It's a physical capability to push the limits. It's being strong. It's being able to endure. Like I'm not a runner. I don't like running, but there was a day not too long ago, not this recent trip, but the trip I was in Texas before that, I was with my best friend, Cody Smith. And he was like, I'm going to go on a run tonight. You should come with me. And I like laughed at him. And he like gave me that look like, bro, you should come with me. I was like, all right, how far are you going? He was like, we're going on a 40-minute run. Don't worry about how far. And I'm like, all right, well, I haven't ran more than 10 minutes, literally, because I haven't ran more than 10 minutes in a long time. And that was like, I ran a mile and jogged in. It took me 10 minutes to run it. But let's do it. And I did it, and I was able to do it. That's a form of physical capability, right? I was able to endure and run the whole time. I didn't stop. I was tired. I was sore the next day, but I ran the whole time. The next day, we were at this event, and we had to do this like lunge thing. And it was like, of course, right after running. But guess what? We had to do lunges around the neighborhood, like literally around this huge neighborhood. And it was probably, I mean, it was easily like 1,000 lunges. But like, that was hard, but I did it. And so to me, and then I took an ice bath afterwards and it was like, no problem, let's do it. And it wasn't no problem. It was, I hate ice baths. And it, you know, I had to like really man up, speaking of masculinity, and get it done and, you know, brace and like breathe. And, but the point is I'm putting my body to the test and I'm able to pass those tests one after another. And even in a test where it's like, even let's say that run, like let's say it was kind of pathetic and I didn't do very well, or I strained something, or I was kind of hurt the next day. I still did it. I didn't die. And I learned from it so I can get better and I'm going to do it again now. That's another form of masculinity. Maybe I couldn't have the physical capability to do it round one, but best believe I'm going to figure out what my weak point is. I'm going to improve that so that I can do it again. So I think a big piece of masculinity to me is the physical side. Obviously I'm biased because fitness is my passion. Fitness and nutrition is what I do. But I do believe that masculinity, that's a big piece of it that comes with masculinity. Like you got to be physically strong and able to endure somewhat unexpected events, right? Like, cause even like to me, it's like, okay, another piece of masculinity is to be able to provide and protect. And that doesn't mean like this whole like macho male, like I'm the provider of my home. And, you know, to each his own, like I do believe in that to an extent, and I am that in my home and I'm proud of that. And that's how we live. But I don't place that on anybody else. Like you live how you live and you run your house, how you run your house. I know how I run my house and what I believe in. And I'm going to just stick to that. That's all that really matters for me. And then that's all that really matters for you is like what I do doesn't affect you and what you do doesn't affect me really. At least in that regard. Right. And so, but I do believe that the, again, capability. So to me, masculinity is a capability for men to be able to provide and protect. So if I'm with my wife and daughter, I'm taking the bullet. I'm lifting whatever it is off of them when it falls. I'm carrying them out of a burning building. I'm able to get a job, work, hustle, grind, get less sleep, make the money, provide for them so they can live a life. I'm able to. Do I need to do all those things to make it happen? Maybe at first I did. And now I don't have to. I lose sleep unless I'm prepping for a show because I just can't sleep well. But like other than that, you know, now I'm in a more comfortable place because I did the work in the beginning. And that's a form of masculinity to me. Now, granted, maybe you're not married. Maybe the burning building is you and your mom or your dad or your brother or your cousin or the person you don't even know, but you see that they need help. Are you capable of helping them? Are you capable of protecting them? Are you capable of providing them? Are you capable of donating and providing charity and security? Are you capable of doing the work? Like to me, that's what masculinity is. I also think that a part of masculinity is actually being able to have enough emotional intelligence, equanimity and empathy to, and I know I'm throwing these E words, I didn't even mean to do that, but these big words, but basically, can I read the room? Can I read the people? Can I see the situation without, and this is why I said empathy and emotional intelligence, but also equanimity, because equanimity is an ability to stay calm and collective and make the right decision during a hectic or chaotic situation. That's really what it is by definition. So can I make the right decision in a moment where my emotions could take over, right? I talked to a client about this on the call, a mentor client the other day, and I said, evidence is the best way to eliminate your emotions. So the reality is that, you know, we all have crazy emotions. We're human. And so our emotions, a lot of times dictate our stories that go on in our head. And so if we have an emotional bias in our head that is clouding our judgment, it's causing us to doubt ourselves. It's eliminating or limiting our confidence and self-belief, increasing our insecurities, and we're making decisions and taking actions and doing things like that based on this idea or this emotional story in our head. That is not masculine. That is not a form of masculinity to me. Now, if you have no emotion, that's not masculine either. I think that true masculinity is being aware of your emotions and being in control of them. So look, I get sad, I get upset, I get triggered, I get emotionally distraught. I get hurt by my loved ones. I put a lot of emotion into the things I do. And if, you know, there's a lot of times where it hits me back in the face, you know, it's a gut punch. So I'm not immune to that stuff, but I can control my actions logically to override those emotions when it's important to do so. Because if I let my emotions get the best of me and now it's negatively impacting the people around me, that is not going to serve the greater purpose of why I'm here. It's not going to serve me. It's not going to serve them. It's not going to allow me to propel forward. It's not masculine, right? So I don't know. It's a kind of a long-winded answer and it's a lot of different things. But to me, like, and this is where I think everybody's going to differ in their answer for masculinity, because truthfully, what I'm explaining right now in my mind isn't even limited to just men necessarily. And that's what usually masculinity is referring to. I'm talking about being a successful human being, really, right? If I'm looking at how do I be the best version of myself? How do I be the strongest mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually? It's all the things I just listed. And that's what masculinity is to me. Like it's not this bravado or macho or whatever it may be or however you want to spin it. It's just being the strongest version of yourself and being able to carry those around you, protect those around you, provide those for those around you, and being able to push yourself and in your capabilities, right? Like, I think that's huge. So, kind of a weird, random, answer from me. I feel like I was kind of bouncing around a bit, but I hope that kind of provides some context. Or, even if like, look, even if you're listening, and I think masculinity is one of those things where you don't have to agree with my definition of it, but if you can listen to what I'm saying and it can spark your mind to go, I think I can improve on some of those areas. That's all I give a shit about. That's all I care about, really. So I hope that happens when listening to that, not necessarily like, oh, that's not what masculinity is, and getting offended or all bent out of shape. I just want you to improve. Right. So anyway, next question. All right. Chris underscore Progovich. And I think I said that right. Chris is one of my good buddies, my clients. He is absolutely crushing it. Shout out to Chris. Progovich. Let me know if I said that right. I sound like a Russian mobster. It sounds really cool. I've actually never said your last name out loud, man, and I like it. So, all right, Chris says, what do you do when you've hit your macros, but you are too hungry to fall asleep? So Chris is in the middle of a cut. I have a really... three easy solutions here, three easy answers here. So what do you do when you are hungry and it's, and you're out of macros and it's stopping you from falling asleep? So what do you do when you want to fall asleep, but you can't because you're hungry and you don't have any macros left? So three answers to this. First answer coming directly from me right now and where I'm at with my prep. I'm 4 weeks out. Guess what? Deal with it. And I think that's to an extent a hardcore answer, and it doesn't matter because that's my answer for myself, so take it or leave it. But I do think that if you're deep into a cut, if you're really motivated and you want to test yourself, speaking of all the things that we just got done talking about with this, if you want to test yourself from a discipline and a willpower and just seeing what you're capable of perspective, there's going to be moments where you're hungry and you just got to deal with it. So my answer would be deal with it. Drink some diet soda to get some carbonation, take some melatonin, fall asleep, plan your day better tomorrow. And that's step two. The next best thing to do is try to fall asleep and plan your day better the next day. Look at your day of eating. Go to the satiety index. It's going to rank the foods that are most satiating per calorie. Choose foods that are more voluminous, so they give you more food on your plate for less calories. They're more filling. They have more fiber, more micronutrients. Drink more water, but just plan your day of eating better so you don't end the day hungry. And then the third thing is that, God forbid, you just can't fall asleep. You can't do it. You need food. If you're truly hungry and it's not a craving out of boredom, go have some like plain protein, literally plain chicken breast, deli turkey, a whey protein shake with water, right? Like not the thick and creamy, like fluffy kind with a bunch of sugar and fat in it. Just like literally whey protein isolate, vanilla, like have some plain protein, because if you truly are hungry and it's stopping you, then yeah, maybe you do need some more calories. Have some calories from protein because it's not going to store as fat. It's going to be good for you. It's not going to negatively impact your physique, and it's going to be the most satiating nutrient. So if you're really hungry, you can test it with protein. So those are three quick and easy answers. Again, I do think there's value in my hardcore answer. I think that at times we have to challenge ourselves. Like there is an element of dieting where you're going to be hungry, whether you're like me and you're 4 weeks out from a competition, or which I'm actually like 3.5 weeks out, I think, as I'm recording this, but, or you're just in a cut. Like you're just like Chris, you're in a cut right now and you're not 4 weeks out from anything. We're just dieting and you're getting leaner and you're progressing well. You are losing body fat by the week. You've dropped weight every week and your progress photos are getting better every single week. Like you're one of my guys that's crushing it right now. And guess what? That means you're in a deficit because you're consistently losing weight. So if you're in a deficit, you're going to be hungry, man. And at times it's like, dude, test yourself mentally, use your willpower, right? If you're super, super hungry and you, if you're hungry or you're craving or you're bored, drink some water, drink some zero calorie beverages of any kind, whether it's Crystal Light, juice, diet soda, carbonated water. Carbonation's fine. I drink tons of diet soda when I'm dieting. It's like, I mean, tons, like I'll have a few cans a day easily. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not negatively impactful for your health. Have some decaf coffee at night. Like that's a good way to do it too. But just have something that is more liquid based. That's going to give you a little bit of, something. And then also if you're not taking a sleep supplement, you know, like shout out to firstform.com/tailored coaching method, go to, sleep aid, or search the sleep aids on there and get either Night Tea or Core 21. Both of them are really good sleep products that are going to help because they have melatonin, so they're going to help you fall asleep, but they also have some different neurotransmitters and things in it that are going to help calm your brain down, lower anxiety, reduce cortisol and stress hormones, like really, really helpful for my sleep, and they're staples for me. So adding something like that can help as well. And then planning your day better to make sure you don't get to the end of the day without any macros left, starving or hungry, is really just boiling down to making sure you're planning your day better. And knowing your diet and knowing the way that I program my clients' diets, you shouldn't be starving that much at the end of the night. A lot of times it's boredom. But nonetheless, if you are a bit hungry, choose higher fiber foods, choose high micronutrient-dense foods. A lot of times people are hungry and I look at their diet and I'm like, man, there's no like sweet potato. There's not a lot of veggies in here. There's not a lot of fruit in here. There's not a lot of high fiber carbs in here. Like, let's add some whole grain bread, some oats, which I know you're eating oats because you love those. So do I. And you know, berries, which are, I mean, you could have a whole bowl of strawberries that are high fiber, low calorie, super filling. Tastes amazing. It's by far my favorite fruit. Always has been. But point being, there's a lot of ways to just make your diet more voluminous, which just means you have more food on your plate per calorie or per 100 calories or however you want to spin it. You can choose foods from the satiety index that are ranked higher that are going to be guaranteed to be more satiating. It's backed by research. And then last but not least, add some protein. So like worst case, if we got to go over calories to cure that hunger, because it really is hunger, we're just going to increase your protein. Right. And so there's been times where I have at the end of the night just had some, like, literally we'll have like just roasted turkey breast, like deli style in the fridge. And it's basically just pure protein. I'll just eat some of that. Because if I really am just hungry and my stomach is hungry, it's not a craving or I'm bored, that'll do the trick. If I'm bored, I'll have some decaf coffee. I'll have like a carbonated, like flavored water or diet soda or something like that. And it's gone. So easy fixes there, man. Hey, sorry to interrupt this podcast, but I briefly want to mention my company, Tailored Coaching Method. I founded Tailored Coaching Method in 2017 as a way to help people lose weight, build muscle, and transform their lives, because I began to see that every other area of people's lives started to change and get better and be more successful when they got in shape and they felt better in their skin. And since then, I've built an entire team of world-class coaches who help people around the world transform right before our eyes. And because you're listening to this podcast, I got to imagine you want to get in shape too, or you're already in shape and you're looking to take it to the next level. Either way, we are the company for you. We specialize in body composition and we can help you no matter where you are in your fitness journey. So if you want help, you want expert coaching, and you want to finally get to the next level so you can start actually looking like you work out, head over to tailoredcoachingmethod.com and click the big yellow button front and center on the screen, or simply go to the description of this podcast and click that link and apply today. The strategy call is completely free and it gives us a chance to get to know you, you a chance to get to know us. And by the end of it, we'll decide if it's a good fit and move forward. All right, let's get back to the show. Cars and creatine. I wonder what you like. Cars and muscle, I'm assuming. Do you need to be aware of sugar when increasing fruit as a low carb source in a cut? No, you don't. From a health perspective. So if you're in a cut and you're actually in a calorie deficit, you're almost guaranteed to not be able to consume enough sugar for it to be a concern from a health perspective, right? I would even recommend, if you're going to get, like, if you have a diet and you're having a lot of sugar, whether it's coming from fruit or processed sugar or anything, try to keep it under 100 grams in general is like an easy general rule of thumb. It's going to make sure you're staying pretty healthy and clear of overdoing fructose, because fructose is going to be predominantly stored in the liver. And for those listening, fructose is what sugar is, like from fruit and such. For example, like a carbohydrate like potato or rice or whatever, that's going to be a starchy carb, and that's going to be glucose when you store it, primarily stored in the muscle tissue. Whereas fructose is going to go into, it's going to turn into liver glycogen, not muscle glycogen necessarily. Some of it can still be used as muscle glycogen or you know, go into the bloodstream and such, but a lot of it's going to be stored in the liver, and you can't store as many carbohydrates or as much glycogen in the liver as you can in the muscle, obviously. So you are limited to an extent. So you don't want to have too much fruit. Now, one of the big things that people forget is when you are on a cut, you need micronutrient-dense foods. So I typically do suggest having still at least one, upwards of three servings of fruit per day when in a calorie deficit cutting for fat loss. And there's a few reasons why. Number one, it's going to help with cravings because it's fruit. It's really sweet. It's going to be tasty. It's good, right? Number two is they're low calorie, high antioxidant, high micronutrient, and a lot of times high fiber if you choose the right ones. So something like blueberries or strawberries or any berries of any kind, really, apples, oranges, kiwis are great, grapefruit, things like this. You're going to get a ton of vitamins and minerals. As we cut, we're lowering our calories and we're losing body fat, both of which can cause nutrient deficiencies, specifically micronutrient deficiencies. It's not going to happen rapidly, but they're found in athletes in these studies. So that means like as we prolong into the cut, it's going to be more likely the further you go from having lower calories coming in and less body fat in your body. Both things that we are after. We're intentionally cutting calories and we're intentionally trying to lose body fat, and we want that. So if we know that, and we know that it could potentially cause us to be more deficient in micronutrients, we want to fill our diet up with more micronutrients, which means choosing foods that are high in micronutrients, which fruits are. So you want to target fruits that are high fiber, high antioxidant, high micronutrient density. These are going to be lower calorie typically as well, and you could eat a lot of them, which is the third reason. It's just good for satiety. So when we're dieting, we want to have more produce in general, fruits and vegetables and clean quote unquote foods, just because they're more filling and it's going to be easier to adhere to the diet when we have more voluminous based foods. So do you need to be aware of sugar when increasing fruit as a low carb source in a cut? Not really. The only thing I would say is that, and this is the only time I say you should be aware of increasing fruit too much, is that again, we can only store so much fructose in our liver. And on top of that, fruit isn't going to be a very good muscle glycogen source. So if we're consuming the majority of our carbohydrates from fruit, especially when in a cut, we're also limiting how much carbohydrates we can get through starch, which is going to be muscle glycogen. And that's going to fuel training. It's going to help us prevent cramps. It's going to help deliver nutrients into the muscle tissue. It's going to help us retain muscle while cutting, because that's quite literally how we store water in the muscle tissue. And muscle tissue is 60 to 65% water. So long story short, we need starchy carbs. And I see a lot of people go into a cut and they eliminate all their starchy carbs. They eliminate oats and potatoes and rice and bread and all these things. But remember that whole grains and sweet potatoes and regular potatoes and yams and these kind of starchy root potato, root veggies, tubers, they would call it, and whole grain oats, whole grain bread. These things have a lot of micronutrients in it as well as fiber too. So although we do need the fruits because they're probably the highest micronutrient dense foods, those and veggies, you're still going to get a lot of those from whole food based carbohydrate sources like potatoes, oats, whole grain bread, stuff like that. So we don't want to increase fruit so much that we eliminate those, because those are going to help us mostly more than any other nutrient or carbohydrate source for training, recovery, avoiding cramps, avoiding injuries in the gym, stuff like that, right? Really, really important. And then the other thing would be just making sure that we're not getting too much sugar, because if we get too much sugar, we're just, you're not going to have a very diverse diet, essentially. I mean, I'm sorry, not too much sugar. You're not going to have a very diverse diet of vitamins and minerals, and you can overdo that. So what I mean by this really is that the easiest way to explain this, in my opinion, is that if somebody is eating a diet that's super rich in fruit, and they're like, I'm getting so much vitamin C and E and K and D and whatever, cool. Well, there's a cap, right? There's a like a standard or a limit you need, like, right? There's a minimum intake that you need, right? A minimum required intake for health. Much like that, there's a maximum required intake, or not even required. There's a maximum demand needed. I don't know how to word it, but essentially, like, my point is if you have the right amount, and this is how fat is too, and this is why I typically like a lower fat diet when somebody's trying to keep a good body composition, because once you get enough fat, like, we know what fat does. It's going to help a lot of health, hormone, brain function. Like, there's certain things it helps with quite a bit. It's good for us. But once we get enough of it, we don't need more of it, right? Like, when you get enough fat per day, your hormones are going to be fine. You know, I don't, like, if I have 20 grams more fat per day, I'm not going to supercharge my testosterone. Nothing really happens. I just eating more fat makes the diet more flexible. That's a big key. That's actually probably one of the most important and beneficial reasons to have more fat in the diet, is because your flexibility for the diet is just way easier. You have more flexibility. You can eat more variety of foods, and it's easier to fit foods in your diet, especially from a social perspective, because that's where fats tend to sneak in. But you're not going to be like hormonally healthier than the person that's eating 20 grams less if you're both consuming enough fat per day, given your body weight, your age, your gender, all those kind of things, right? And I say that to say that if you consume enough vitamin C, I don't know what the USDA like recommended daily dosage is off the top of my head, but let's say it's 1,000, you know, milligrams a day or whatever. If you have 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, you're healthy, you're good. But this person's having so much fruit that they're getting 2,000. They're not healthier. In fact, they're probably just going to flush it out. They're going to shit their pants. Like, when you overconsume magnesium, when you overconsume Vitamin C, when you overconsume these vitamins, guess what? You end up just peeing more and urinating it out, sweating it out, or essentially having pretty extreme bowel movements, and it's going to cause probably some diarrhea and you're going to flush it out anyway. So you don't get benefit from consuming more vitamins and minerals. You get benefits from consuming enough. So I say all that to say, like, there's no point in doubling down and getting twice as many fruits just to get more vitamins, because once you get enough, you got enough. So the general recommendation for me and my clients when they're following a diet protocol is 1 to 3 servings of fruits, and then probably 2 to 3 servings of veggies per day on a cut. And with the fruits specifically, if you are consuming 3 servings, but your carbs are getting lower and that's eliminating how many starchy carbs you can have, then I would probably bump that down to 1 to 2 servings, and then eventually 1. You always want at least 1, but I want to keep starchy carbs in there. Starchy being oats, rice, potatoes, stuff like that, in there as long as I can, because that's going to be what is going to fuel muscle and training more than anything else. So anyway, a little bit of a tangent, but I hope that kind of paints a good picture on just fruit in general. Stephanie Joe, 81. When building muscle, is it wise or ever necessary to increase protein beyond 1 gram per pound of body weight? I think so. I wouldn't necessarily say it's wise, because it's all case dependent. There's certain situations where it is wise, and there's certain situations where it's not going to hurt you, but it's not going to make a difference. So is it necessary? Is it ever necessary to increase your protein over 1 gram per pound if your goal is building muscle? Yes, there is. The primary benefit of going above 1 gram per pound is typically reserved for those cutting, because there is some research to show if we increase our protein above what we quote unquote need to be optimal for muscle growth. So let's say above 0.8 grams per pound is like the bare minimum. And just for the sake of the question, we're going over 1 gram per pound in body weight, during a cut, there is some research to support that you might actually be more likely to maintain muscle. So you might be better off maintaining more muscle tissue while in a deficit and while cutting if you consume more than 1 gram per pound. So there's a benefit to having a higher, bigger increase in muscle protein synthesis and just having more protein and amino acid reserves in your system while cutting to maintain muscle. So the first benefit of consuming more than 1 gram per pound of body weight is going to be just the simple fact that maintaining muscle during a cut is going to be greater. The second benefit is going to be that it's more satiating. So protein is the most satiating nutrient there is, which means during a cut, it's super beneficial to have more than 1 gram per pound for a lot of people, because it just helps you stay satiated during a fat loss phase. And the third benefit is that it's next to impossible from what we know to store as body fat. There's been research showing 2 to 3 grams per pound, which is obnoxiously high in protein, and it did not store as body fat, despite them being in a calorie surplus or eating more calories than the other group and still losing just as much body fat as the group that had less calories. So this just goes to show during a cut, it makes a lot of sense. Now, when we go into a gaining phase and we're trying to build muscle, it doesn't make as much sense, because you don't want to be overly satiated from too much protein, because you actually want more carbs in the diet. You want to go into a calorie surplus to build muscle, and that's primarily going to come from carbohydrates, because that's going to fuel your muscles to grow and to train hard. The second reason is that carbohydrates are what's called protein sparing. So when we have more carbohydrates, it actually spares our body's need for protein. So we don't need as much protein when carbs are high. The third reason is that if we have too much protein, it can actually disrupt our ability potentially to break down carbohydrates and use them as fuel. What's called gluconeogenesis, which is just a fancy word of saying we're taking a nutrient like protein and converting it into glucose in the body so that we can use it as energy, happens when we have a lot of protein present. And what we don't want is our body to go through gluconeogenesis and try to use protein as fuel for training instead of carbohydrates, because our carbohydrates are high enough given that we're in a calorie surplus basically from carbohydrates solely, and carbohydrates are always going to be the preferred energy source for our body. We know that. So we don't want to detour our body from using carbs because we have so much protein in the diet. So there's a few reasons why it doesn't really make sense. Now, the caveat to that is, as we increase carbohydrates, we're also going to get more trace carbs. There's a lot of research to point that it does, like, you know, protein is protein. I'm still a fan of getting the majority of my protein from bioavailable sources. So that's going to be meat, eggs, dairy, fish, stuff like that. And when it is vegan sources, it's predominantly going to be like a vegan protein powder, because it's micronized and it's broken down in a more favorable way from an amino acid perspective. But if we're getting a ton of our protein from peanut butter, oats, potatoes, rice, all of the trace proteins, and we're like, let's say we're consuming 0.8 grams per pound, but really, you know, 0.2 of that. So really it's only 0.6 is bioavailable, because 0.2 of that is actually going to be from these trace carbs, right? Trace protein from carbohydrates. That's not going to be very advantageous for muscle growth either. The other thing I would add too is, like, there's also an element of protein being a buffer to not overshoot. So if we have a good amount of protein, maybe even over a gram per pound, just slightly during a gaining phase, we might actually control our body's ability, or we might control ourselves from not overeating too much. You know, there was a recent study that I'm going to dive into with our chief science officer here soon in the next podcast I do with him. And there was a study that showed maintenance versus 5% versus 15% calorie surplus for muscle growth. And they didn't really see any difference between 5 and 15%. Now, there's a lot of limitations to the study, length, where they're looking at muscle growth, so on and so forth, but there's always going to be limitations. However, what we do know is that you might not gain a ton more muscle from going into a 15% calorie surplus versus a 5%, because the main thing that is going to cause muscle growth is training. So if we're consuming enough protein, carbs, calories, so on and so forth, to recover optimally and train again and just repair the tissue after we train it and after we push ourselves, then we're doing more than enough to make sure that we are building muscle. And we probably don't need to do more. We probably don't need to add in more and more calories, right? And this is a really positive thing for most people, because if we go to a 15, 20% surplus trying to gain as fast as possible, you're probably going to gain a bunch of fat. And then you're going to have to pull that, pull more calories next time you cut to try to remove that fat that you gained during the gaining phase, which was not the goal. The goal was to build muscle, right? So I say all this to say that I would actually go on the conservative end and say, hey, like, let's not go into a super aggressive surplus. Let's actually be pretty conservative with it. Let's go with like a 5%. And if bumping your calories up to by 5% kind of spikes your hunger and it causes you to be more hungry and want more calories and want more food, well, then maybe we bring protein up a little bit to cure that hunger and help that satiety while we're in this surplus, to avoid overshooting and going into this huge surplus when we can get away with just as much muscle growth in a small surplus, right? And that could be a benefit. And this is where, like, we can play with and look at all the different forms of science literature to support that. But really, it's a coaching tool, right? It comes down to coaching experience. And my experience says that that is a good tool in those kind of situations. Last but not least, there is, in my opinion, some benefit as well during a reverse diet or transition from a cut into a gaining phase. So if somebody is going from a cut and then they're going to transition into a, what we would call holding phase, which is like a primer phase, but it's like between, right? It's essentially, when we look at periodizing a diet, we go from a deficit and a cut to wanting to get into a gaining phase, which requires a surplus. We don't want to bounce straight into a surplus too aggressively, and that's going to overshoot fat as well. What we want to do is slowly transition to that. We want to basically have this like bridge, right? And we call that a holding phase. And this holding phase, we might want to increase protein first. So we actually reverse diet protein up, because that's going to be a safe calorie to increase into their maintenance to make sure that we get calories up, we get the metabolism going, we get their intake overall healthier, biofeedback is going to improve, satiety is going to improve, hunger cues are going to improve, and we're going to do so with a nutrient that's not going to store as fat. We might increase protein above what's required, and we might even increase it above what's going to be, you know, sustainable, not from a standpoint of like they're sick because they're eating so much protein, but we don't need to keep it that high. Like, let's bring it up through this holding phase and this transition. And then as carbs start to go up, we can lower the protein, right? So we kind of shift, keeping the calories the same, we'll shift protein down, carbs up, because we might bump their protein up to, let's say, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4 grams per pound, depending on how lean they are. And then as carbs go up, when we go into this lean gaining phase, we can bring that protein down essentially paralleled with it, right? Simultaneously, to level out those calories between carbs and protein. And this might allow us to help with the hunger, the cravings, the transition, avoid gaining too much fat during a reverse diet, going into a gaining phase, so on and so forth. And that can be really helpful. So I think there's a lot of application for higher than average protein, like going above a gram per pound during even a gaining phase. And more than anything, I think there's a lot of advantage to going above a gram per pound in cutting, especially, you know, and in maintenance phases. So I do it a lot. I have a lot of clients that I put at even just like 1.1, to be honest with you, is great. 1.1, 1.2. All right. So we have some questions to wrap up with, that are, we're going to say unknown, because they're either, they wish to be unknown. They sent them in, or I can't pronounce their name because they're like, numbers and random letters and stuff. So there's no point. So the first one is 15,000 steps a day too excessive when also lifting 6 days per week? Not at all. I think steps are all relative. For some people, that's like very normal. I have clients that step 20,000 steps a day, and I have clients that step 7,000 steps a day. It's all relative. There's going to be the predominance of your health benefits are going to start at about 7,000, and they're going to cap out about like between 11 and 13, depending on the individual. And that's what most research shows is like, we see this huge spike. Once you hit 7,000, you start seeing this increase in health from stepping over 7,000 steps a day. And then once you get beyond like 11, 12, 13,000 steps a day, those health benefits, when we're talking about cardiovascular health, immune health, blood sugar regulation, they kind of tap out for the most part. You can time your steps post meal and stuff like that. And that might help aid blood sugar regulation, digestion. But for the most part, your daily step count, like that's going to be the most health beneficial between 7 and 13. And then after 13, the health benefits don't continue to linearly increase. They kind of tap out, right? But you're still going to burn calories. So if your goal is fat loss, then 100%, right? Like I'm stepping way more than that right now. I don't count, like I count 11,000 steps a day personally, and I do not count the steps that are in my cardio. So when I go to do cardio, I put my step counter, my Apple Watch, basically, I put it away and I just do my cardio. So if we included the amount of cardio I'm doing into that, I definitely would be doing more than 15,000. So it's just a calorie expenditure. I don't think calories, like you're not going to adapt to the steps and stop burning calories from your steps until I want to say you reach over 20,000 or something. It's like 20 or 25,000. Like it's quite a bit, or it's a duration. Like you got to be like hunter and gatherer tribes. They've noticed this a lot, but they've been doing that their whole life. So they've always stepped that much. So after years of stepping 20, 30, 40,000 steps a day, cause they're hunter and gatherers, their body doesn't burn nearly as much calories, cause they're really good at conserving energy while having such a high activity level. And that's a completely different scenario, right? Next question is the training program that you are personally following in your app as well? Yes, it is. So you can go to thetaylortrainer.com. I'll put a link to that in the description of this podcast as well. It's always in there. You can get a 7-day free trial. After that, it's $29 a month. So it is dirt cheap, extremely affordable for expert programming. All my programs are in there. My program is the one I'm currently running that I'm almost done with personally is called Pure Physique, and it's 15 weeks long, 3 5-week blocks that have progressions throughout each 5-week section. It's basically like a push, pull, legs, push, pull, but it's titled a little bit differently because it's more aesthetically driven. So it's geared towards men's physique. So this is a program for men. I have another program in there called Bikini Comp that is very similar, but it's altered the volume and the, not necessarily the total volume, but like what the emphasis of that volume is in the split is going to be different because it's geared towards a female physique, what a bikini competitor would be after, or somebody striving for a bikini competitor physique, for example. So you don't have to be competing to use the program at all. But my program, Pure Physique, it is basically, it's like a push, pull, legs, push, pull. So there's one leg day. And the reason for that is because I don't get judged on my legs. So it's an upper body specialization program, which is good to do when you get more to intermediate advanced to specialize in a certain area of your body and put more volume there and emphasis there. So you can see a bigger difference in one area versus trying to balance it out too much. The push day, the first push day is chest, shoulders, and triceps. The second day is pull, and it's back and rear delts. Then it's legs, and then it's the push day is chest, shoulders, rear delts, and then the back day is back and biceps. So with men's physique, you actually don't want to train your arms too much because it can off-center and off-balance your delts and your lats and things like that. So it's much more emphasis on shoulders, chest, lats, rear delts. That's why there's only a little bit of arms in there. But so it's kind of like a push pull legs, but I'm like basically removing some of the arm training and I'm adding an extra rear delt training so that like cap that upper back posterior shoulder area. But yeah, it's 15 weeks long. I'm altering it a little bit right now just because my fatigue is through the roof with prep so close or stage so close. I'm just a couple weeks out. So I'm altering it a little bit just to manage fatigue, just from a volume perspective. I'm just lowering volume, dropping some sets, but it's the exact program I've followed this entire prep. So if you want to jump in and do the program I've literally been following my entire prep, That one is in there. There's a ton of other ones. She Strong, Power Builder, Performance Bodybuilding, Minimalist, which is a 3-day full body training program. Power Builder and She Strong are like power building programs. So strength and hypertrophy, 4-day upper lower splits, Bikini Comps, 5-day, Performance Bodybuilding's 5-day, High Volume Hypertrophy. It's a push pull leg split, 6 days a week. There's a lot of programs in there. And then when I map out my my program for my gaining phase after the show, that's going to go in there as well. So my programs are always going to be in the app. So if you want to train like me, if you want to train literally with me and just be kind of like tagging along with what I'm doing, just like a week or two behind me, sometimes more, in this case, it's about a month behind me, you can absolutely jump in the app. I mean, I guess you're as far behind, you know, if you jump in the app in 6 weeks, you're going to be 15 weeks behind me because I'm going to be done with this program. But point being is, if you want to train like me with me, do my program, literally, then yeah, 100% jump in the app, thetaylortrainer.com. Let's do two more quick questions. Do you personally still take on coaching clients? Yes, I do. I don't believe that you should run a coaching company if you don't. I think that you should always have your finger on the pulse and in the trenches. I don't coach as many people as my coaches do. And my roster is limited and a little bit more exclusive. I work with a very specific person now, typically. We all kind of have our specialties in a way. Like, we're all generalists to an extent. Like, we work with so many different people, but there is a very specific person and goal that I thrive on. And so I typically reserve my spots for those people because there's other people on my team who thrive with a certain people as well. But that's the beauty of Taylor Coaching Method, because no matter what your goal is, we have somebody for you, you know? But yeah, I absolutely still coach people. To me, like, I delegate a bunch of stuff behind the scenes that I don't need to be doing. Like, there's stuff that nobody knows who does. It just needs to get done for the you know, gears to turn in the business, right? And the business needs to run and flourish. And as long as it gets handled, it gets handled. And in fact, by me letting go of it, I can usually find somebody who's actually better at that thing than I am. I'm here to coach. God put me on earth to coach people through fitness, nutrition, personal development. Like, I'm here to be a change maker. And so I got to be in the trenches doing that, making change. And that also allows me to lead my team. It allows me to improve and develop more systems for our clients and for how we operate as coaches and how our software and systems and automations and everything we do, how we do it, how we program fat loss and muscle growth and training and all these kind of things. It allows me to lead them better. It allows me to guide the company culture better. It allows me to be involved with the clients more, both our members and my own personal clients. It allows me to market way better. Like, I can talk on this podcast the way I do because I still work with people. So 100%, I still take coaching clients on because I think it's necessary to be what I want to be, which is the best coach in the industry. And I want to run the best coaching team in the industry, like, plain and simple. So there's a link to apply for coaching in this podcast. There always is. So you can head to taylorcoachingmethod.com, click the yellow button, or just click the link in the description of this podcast. And shoot, you can ask for me in the application if you really want to. And I'll do my best to make sure that I'm the one that gets on the call with you and we'll try to make it happen, or I'll pair you with the best coach for you. Either way, you can probably talk to me directly because I still do like to talk to people jumping on our team. So, and then last but not least, the last question of the day, what's the biggest change you've made during prep besides cutting calories? And this is a really good question. I would say the biggest change I've made is just standardizing my meals more. So, less variety so that I can have like a very specific structured and standardized set of meals, because adjustments to a fat loss plan are a lot better when there's less variety and fluctuations. I can have a lot of variety throughout the day. Like, I have different types of proteins and veggies and carbs and fats and starches and fruits. And like, I change up the food every meal. So I'm not like, okay, meal 4, more ground turkey. Like, no, I change up the protein source every meal. I change up veggies throughout the day. Like, I change that stuff up. But once you have your meal set, if you create that system to where that stuff doesn't change day to day, you've standardized your intake to a point where the accuracy is through the roof. And therefore, the adjustments you make along the fat loss journey are that much better and that much more accurate, meaning that your results are going to be quicker and better. So that's been a big, big thing. I would also say that a big change I've made is cutting out alcohol. I didn't do that the whole prep. I did that for the last, like, what has it been? Probably like 6 to 8 weeks of prep, which I am including the next few weeks in. So, you know, by the time I hit stage, it'll be like 2 full months of no drinking, outside of like one day in August, for a wedding. So all of September, October, oh yeah, it'll be more than that. So 8 weeks, none at all. And then I would say it would have been like 10 weeks, So it was like 2 weeks, and then I drank at a wedding, and then I had 8 straight weeks of no drinking before stage. So that's been a big change, and that's helped a lot. I don't think it's necessary for general fat loss. I think you can get away with once a week for sure. I usually do, but it's been helpful for me taking it this far. And then another big change, was my schedule. I was very much so like, it's crazy because, you know, a lot of times I made the excuse of like, I got so much going on that I don't have time to do 2 a days. Like if I'm going to do cardio, it's going to have to be like right after my workout. If I'm going to prep all these meals and not do like something easy, like Greek yogurt and throw like Quaker oats in it, right? Cause it's just grab and go easy, add a protein bar shake. I don't have time to prep meals cause I got too much going on. The reality is when you have a serious goal and you give a shit about something, you make time for it. And I made time for it, and I'm doing 50 minutes of cardio in the morning, and I'm actually getting more done throughout my day cause I'm productive because of it. It starts my day on a really good foot. It's the same thing with like meditation. People say, I don't have time to meditate. I've done that. I've said that too. No, you meditate and it creates more time. Whether you realize it or not, creating space and slowing down allows you to move quicker later on and make more time later on. It's crazy. So that's been a huge change. Just adjusting my schedule to fit things in because I really care about the school. I'm very motivated and I'm showing up for myself and I'm showing up for the people that I'm doing this for. You know, it's not just for me. It's to inspire people like you. It's to inspire members, my team, stuff like that, to live what I preach, right? So I think the biggest change is just adjusting my schedule and realizing I do have enough time. I have enough time for this goal. I have enough time to train for it, to prep my meals for it, to still be present with my family and to run the business at a very high level. So, we all got time. It's just about making it. And for some of us, it's harder than others. I'm a very busy person, so it wasn't easy, but once I figured out how to do it, I made it happen. So that's a wrap, guys. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I hope that you got some valuable insights. If there's anything I can do, please reach out, Cody@tailoredcoachingmethod.com. Click the green button if you're in Spotify to leave a question, or click the form that's in the description of this podcast to make sure that you can leave a question in the question form. I want to answer you guys' question in the next Q&A. Share this with a friend, send it to them, post on your Instagram story, tag me @CodyMcBroom, whatever you got to do. I want to make sure that I thank you for listening. And as always, guys, I appreciate you and I cannot wait for you here to the next episode. Catch you next time.